This is Tim Major, editor of Child Education Plus, and I'm speaking today to Lucy Adamson, who's a language teaching advisor at the National Centre for Languages, SILT. So, Lucy, thank you for speaking to us today.
My pleasure.
Let's start with the government's information about modern foreign languages. Could you summarise the recommendations related to modern foreign languages within, firstly, the Independent and the Cambridge reviews?
Certainly. Well, the independent review of the primary curriculum led by Sir Jim Rose reported last April, and they made recommendations according to languages. The first recommendation about languages is that it will become a statutory requirement of the national curriculum at Key Stage 2 from 2011. So that means that programmes of learning will be available on a rolling programme from year three, from this date, because obviously you can't create programmes of learning for year six until programmes of learning in previous years in Key Stage 2 have been rolled out. And so there were other recommendations. That's the first one. The other recommendations that the independent review set out was that we make links between English and the new language, so linking new language learning to literacy work in the primary curriculum. Another recommendation was to focus on one or two languages. So whilst encouraged looking at language experience and celebrating the language diversity of the school, that was to be encouraged, or a language as part of a themed week, say for example looking at Japan, that the main language focus at Key Stage 2 will be one or two languages. Now, some schools are doing the two language model, so that's maybe one language in years three and four, and then a new language in years five and six. And linking to the choice of languages is thinking about transition and how that needs to be considered when selecting a language at Key Stage 2, thinking about then children going on to Key Stage 3 and the languages available to them at secondary school. The fourth recommendation is that sustained training is vital in order for languages to be fully embedded across Key Stage 2. Teachers will need support. And the final recommendation was a clear timeline for inspection needs to be in place, and so that Ofsted would come in to look at languages at Key Stage 2 by 2014.
Okay, and thinking about the issue of connecting to secondary school language teaching, do you think that it's understandable then that many primary schools, or most primary schools, have actually chosen to teach French as their foreign language?
I think it's understandable, given that a lot of primary teachers are not necessarily language experts, so they don't necessarily have a languages degree or huge experience of teaching languages. And so teachers have got to work to their strengths and use their previous learning experience. And so most primary teachers, if they studied languages, it was probably French, because that's the first foreign language taught in secondary schools. And that's just a historic issue. That's something that is still the case today. And so teachers would find it very challenging if they'd done, say, French at O level or GCSE, to then go and teach German. And so whilst we really encourage language diversity wherever possible, both in Key Stage 2 and Key Stage 3, we also need to be realistic about what teachers are able to offer in terms of their existing skill sets. But obviously, if teachers are teaching French at Key Stage 2, and the NFER research shows that about 89% are teaching French, that obviously has an implication for the languages that children probably go on to do at secondary school as well.
Absolutely. And do you imagine then this will be kind of a long-term trend, you know, if children themselves are learning French in school and then become teachers later on, that perhaps they will go on to teach French in later years?
I can see what you're saying. I think, I know recently the DCSF have talked about language diversification and introducing languages such as Mandarin and trying to widen the languages offered and the languages taught and learnt by children. But I think at the moment the trend is probably, I can't imagine a huge reverse or U-turn in the percentage of French at the moment. We can obviously encourage teaching and learning of other languages, but I think at the moment French is probably going to stay high up for quite a while.
Okay, on a slightly different subject, would you recommend modern or foreign languages to be taught across the whole of Key Stage 2?
Yes, and that's a recommendation that's been set out since the primary entitlement, which is the cornerstone of the National Languages Strategy in 2002, that children should have the opportunity to learn a new language across Key Stage 2. And I personally think, yes, absolutely, that they should begin that language learning experience in Year 3, so the first year of Key Stage 2. And key documentation to support primary languages, so the Key Stage 2 framework for languages that came out in 2005 very much starts the learning experience in year 3, and then children develop their language skills over the 4 years into year 6.
And would you say there's any it would be appropriate at all to introduce languages in any respect at Key Stage 1?
Yes, that's really interesting because we know there's a lot of really sort of exciting practice going on in both foundation stage, so nursery reception, and Key Stage 1, so years 1 and 2. Many schools are offering languages at Key Stage 1, we found that even younger children are more willing and open to language learning. And the only thing to bear in mind in terms of consideration of introducing it, either at foundation stage or Key Stage 1, is to think about the language capacity of the staff. Because if you're starting, say, French in foundation stage, by the time the children get to year 6, they will have a very good level, and it's whether the teachers are confident to teach the children at that level. Quite a lot of schools I've been talking to recently have offered possibly, say, Italian in foundation stage or Key Stage 1, and then started, say, French in Key Stage 2. And that gives the children a language experience, the exposure to a new language, the education of the ear, and it's thinking about what do we want to achieve at Key Stage 1. Well, really, it's the same as at Key Stage 2. We want language learning to be a rich and enjoyable experience. And so if that's our key aim, then changing language at the end of Key Stage 1, I don't think is a major issue.
Okay. And thinking about language learning as a rich experience, as you say, can you suggest particular ways in which languages can be used as a good sort of starting point for cross-curricular learning? Because I know this is a big emphasis, especially in Jim Rose's review.
Yes, I think we need to think very carefully about what we mean, first of all, by cross-curricular learning. We need to ensure that the links that we make between languages and other areas of the curriculum are meaningful, so that they're carefully matched to other areas of the curriculum, and they're suitable at a suitable level for the children, so both age-appropriate and the right level of cognitive challenge for the children. It's not making piecemeal links, or we'll just do this because we're saying, you know, tokenistic gestures towards making links. So it's thinking about, for example, say in literacy, if the children are working on connectives in their literacy, for example, in year 5, that they then, if they're in their language learning at a similar level, they can look at how connectives are used in the new language and they have the same feature. It's almost those epiphany moments where children realise, oh, that's a skill I've learned in literacy, oh, it's a skill also in language, and it really contextualises the learning and reinforces and consolidates it. And there's a lot of possibly what we talk about cross-curricular links, sometimes known as embedding, or children maybe sometimes do the mental maths, their maths warm-up or their PE warm-up, or they're looking at art, or looking at, say, a French, German, Spanish artist. Well, I think we need to be really clear about ensuring that it's meaningful, and that I think for most primary teachers, they're not delivering the content of another curriculum area through the new language. That's what we've called CLIL, Content Language Integrated Learning. So, for example, you might be delivering the science curriculum entirely in the medium of French. That is happening in certain areas, but I certainly don't think that's the majority. I think when we talk about cross-curricular links, it's making links to curriculum, but not exclusively in the new language.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so earlier you mentioned about teachers sometimes not being too confident about teaching languages. What advice would you give to a teacher who was nervous about teaching a foreign language?
So I would encourage them to seek support, and there's a wide range of support available. A lot of local authorities across the country, I think there are about 150-odd, have a languages advisor or consultant, and one of their roles is to provide support for teachers. They offer training, so continuing professional development. What teachers really need is practical support that's going to be of relevance in the classroom, that they can use immediately and put into practice. And so they need to access the training that's available. They also can come on courses we run at Silt, so we run one-day CPD courses. We've just recently had the Primary Languages Show, a bigger annual event in Liverpool, with a wide range of workshops, offering lots of practical ideas. Another issue is the language upskilling. So a lot of primary teachers feel they need to develop their own language skills to support their teaching. And so at Silt, we've been working with the DCSF to produce the language upskilling specification. So this, if you like, is similar to a syllabus for a GCSE exam. And it's something that local authorities, higher education institutes can take as a basis for planning training for primary teachers, very much rooted in the Key Stage 2 framework, looking at the language that primary teachers need for their classroom, but also going beyond that and trying to also meet the interests of adult learners. And so it's things like that that are going to provide real support for practicing class teachers.
Okay, so you mentioned some of the language training there. Is there any other training or particular documentation that you think teachers should make use of?
Yes, I mean, I certainly would encourage people to look at the Primary Languages website, which it really is a one-stop shop for everything and anything to do with primary languages. So it offers instant access to all the advice and support and the key documentation that people need, such as the Key Stage 2 framework. There's also links to the QCA schemes of work for Key Stage 2. So the framework is not a scheme of work, it's a reference point for languages across Key Stage 2. The QCA schemes of work provide the content to deliver the five strands of the framework. And at Silt, we're producing resources called Tools for Schools, which support the delivery. They resource the QCA schemes, so it should help teachers and save them a lot of time. Also on the Primary Languages website is the Training Zone, and the Training Zone is an interactive, if you like, an online toolkit that has video clips, over 200 video clips of teachers up and down the country. So it's the Primary Languages Training Zone is the Key Stage 2 framework in action, if you like. And so you have video clips in specific languages, but then you also have sound files and transcripts in French, German, Spanish, Italian, Japanese and Mandarin for all the video clips. There's an awful lot of support on the Training Zone to enable teachers to watch a clip, and if they really like it but it's not in the language they're teaching, they can then use the sound file and transcript to adapt the activity and support their own language development for teaching and learning.
Okay. And are there particular ways, so you mentioned about training and, you know, available documentation, that sort of thing, are there particular ways that schools themselves can support language teachers?
I think in terms of schools, I think it really is crucial that the head teacher is fully supportive of the staff, particularly the primary languages subject coordinator, that everyone in the school appreciates the rationale for primary language learning, and that everybody's keen to work together and support each other. And so if the head teacher is able to support the subject coordinator and identify the money that they've received for a budget for things like resources, also be aware of funding available from the local authority for training, but also I think just to be supportive and that languages really is sort of seen as part of the curriculum and an important part. And that if teachers are struggling to convince colleagues of the merits of teaching languages, that the head teacher can support the primary languages subject coordinator with that.
And are many schools employing specialist language teachers or subject coordinators?
The most recent data from the NFER actually on this particular question is from 2007. Now actually shows that 44% of schools In 44% of schools, it's primary class teachers who are delivering, so that's almost half. But then there is, so a peripatetic specialist teacher or teacher from a secondary school, is you're looking at about 20-30%. So certainly visiting specialists is a considerable minority. It's basically schools need to be free to work with a model that best suits their needs. But what we're very keen to ensure is that whatever model is provided, it is sustainable. It doesn't just rely on one member of staff. If they were to leave, then things aren't able to carry on.
And what types of funding are available for language teaching in schools?
So So funding for primary languages comes from the Department of Children, Schools and Families, the DCSF, and it's known as what's called standards funds. So the money confirmation has just recently gone out to local authorities from the department about the lump sum figure that each local authority is going to receive, and that money goes to local authority, and then at least two-thirds needs to be devolved directly to primary schools, and so that really is the bulk. So some of it will go into schools and people can buy resources, some of it will actually fund and supply cover so that teachers can go on training courses run by, for example, the local authority.
Okay, and I think my final question, in your opinion, what do you think are the qualities of a really good language teacher?
Okay, it's an interesting question. I actually think the qualities of a really good language teacher are very similar to those of the qualities of a good primary teacher, because we're talking about primary languages here. And I think obviously it's the qualities of a good primary teacher who can also add the language dimension. So things like a teacher who can engage and enthuse children, to motivate them, and I think to stimulate their innate curiosity about language learning, but actually learning generally. And it's that sort of desire in children to learn and find out more and sort of begin what we would hope would be a lifelong love of languages. I think it's all of that good teaching that, you know, we recognise in primary schools, but obviously to be able to transfer that over to language learning specifically.
Okay, well, thanks so much for speaking to us, Lucy.
My pleasure, thank you very much.